You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build the social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Welcome to Social Selling Simplified. I'm your host, Ashley Shaw, and today I'm talking with Tara Coleman, and she is a clinical nutritionist that has spent the last 15 years helping thousands of people learn how to eat with confidence and live the healthy life they deserve. Her success is based on the philosophy that nutrition is a science, but eating is a behavior. So she equips her students with down-to-earth nutrition education, behavioral strategies, and emotional eating tools so they not only know how to eat, but they know how to stick with it. She's also been featured by media outlets including NBC, CBS, Dr. Oz, The Good Life, Forbes, and ESPN. Thank you so much for being here today, Tara. I so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it too. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, I can't wait to dig into all these things because I think I just love the science behind why we do things and the science behind change. And I think that it's easy to get caught up in why, I guess, like in just feeling overwhelmed with all the things. It's easy to not remember how much it's ingrained in our habits and all the things we need to do to learn differently and how to change habits. So maybe what we can do is let's just start with the nutritional piece and how you really got into what you do now as a nutritionist.
Well, I was not born a nutritionist by any means, not even close. You know, I was like everyone else, standard, you know, suburban kid, loved my Happy Meals, loved all the things. What I was born was a kind of a nerd. I don't think I told you this, Ashley, but I used to dress up for Halloween when I was very young, like, you know, 7 and 8, as Louis Pasteur. Do you know who that is? He is the scientist that invented pasteurization. And so all my friends were like bunnies and cats. And I was like, hi, my name is Louis Pasteur. Please give me some Halloween candy. So somehow I still did have friends. I'm still surprised to this day. But I, like I said, I was a pretty big science nerd. And so I also, unfortunately, my mother passed away when I was 11 and she passed away from heart disease. And so I became really interested in kind of in not necessarily in health, but in getting rid of disease. And so I went to school, my undergrad's in biology, with the mindset that if we can figure out genetics or if we can figure out the problem, we'll just fix it, right? And so that's how I started my career. And I spent about 6 years in the biotech industry as a scientist, just like Louis Pasteur. And but 1 year I got some personal lab results back that I wasn't really happy with. And it wasn't anything awful, but I was showing some warning signs for heart disease. And my doctor said, you know, you need to stay active and watch your diet. And I honestly just didn't know the first thing about food. I didn't think about it before, but I figured, you know, this can't be that hard. I'll just read some books and go on the internet and, you know, easy peasy. And well, I was overwhelmed and discouraged because everything said something different. And it was a really frustrating and kind of disheartening situation. You know, I felt like there was something wrong with me because I couldn't figure it out. And so at that point, I went back to school. And really just for fun, again, you know, big nerdy kid thinks going to school is fun. But I fell in love with it and ended up leaving my career and went into starting my private practice.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And what did you do before nutrition?
I worked in the biotech industry. So I was a chemist and a computer scientist. So I would, you know, I wore my lab coat and I would be studying therapies that people need to, you know, get through disease and things along those lines.
So interesting. I love when those things like all intersect that maybe seem so unrelated. I love when that happens. It's like you can never see the dots connect looking forwards.
Yeah.
But you can always see them connect when you look back and like from that original story you started with, how that all has like brought you to this like beautiful place that you're at right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I remember leaving my career, which was a pretty kind of ridiculous thing for me to do. I was very, you know, I was on a pretty fast track to a lot of success. And I remember the owner of my company saying, you know, first being shocked because I was doing something so different. And in actuality, it wasn't that different. It was just, you know, I still have the same end game. It's just a different, you know, application of it. And then I remember him also saying, you know, if you need to come back, you just let me know. And me being so convinced, like, no, I'm just going to start a business. I'm just going to get, I'll just do it. I'll just get clients. This is going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then I realized that starting a business is a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I admire it. Yeah, totally. I admire the drive because I, somebody in my career tell me, this was after maybe 10 or 11 years of being in the fitness industry. And I was having like a bit of a like world collapse of like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life right now. And I really want to go back to training and development where I like felt so at home. And he was like, yeah, there's no money in that. Like, sorry to say, and just like laughed at me. And I was like, okay, so this is what I need to prove. And like, it just became one of those moments that was so defining for me, you know, to just say like, I think the really cool thing about all of that is like, no matter what your skill set, like I came from I had an English literature degree, a women's studies degree. And then I was like getting into fitness, like, how the heck do those things come together? And it's funny because it like you just keep moving. If you just keep aligning and aligning and aligning, it eventually comes together in ways, like beautiful ways the universe just provides. And you just don't know how it's going to look, but there you are as, you know, as it unfolds. So
totally. Yeah, and looking back at your story, I didn't know all that, but it seems so clear right now how those all came together. I mean, you brought it all together in a really, you know, honest, natural, authentic way, but looking back is way different than looking forward.
It is. Yeah. I remember telling my mom that I was going to be working in a gym as a personal trainer and she had like a meltdown with me. She was like, what? And they had owned a gym too. So it was funny that anyways, so that was their reaction, but it all does come together in some beautiful way. So I love that about your story and it all just like everything that you've done has been, it's like intentional in its own way. So that's so cool. So why don't we talk a little bit more then about your philosophy around nutrition and science and how those things like really collide with behaviors and like why people really struggle?
Absolutely. Well, when I first started, I wanted the answer, I think like all of us, to be very black and white. You know, I wanted the answer to be in rules or numbers. And if you eat this many grams of protein and this many calories and, you know, everything will be fine. And obviously there is a science to nutrition, of course, but eating is a behavioral skill. And if you think back to every time that maybe you have not been consistent or struggled in some sort of way, it's most likely not rooted in you not understanding that vegetables are good for you, right? It's more likely rooted in how do I stay consistent? You know, how do I relate to foods? How do I love, you know, pleasurable foods and healthy foods? You know, how do I not beat myself up when I fall off track? And so true change comes from consistency of action, period. And behavioral skills and habits is the secret sauce when it comes to consistency of action. So you can have all the nutrition knowledge in the world, but if you can't apply it, it's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because like, I think some people feel like when they struggle, they need to study more of like the nutrition side, but it's like information can also be overwhelming as to like what works and what plan can you go on? Like, I mean, there's so many different things out there.
Yeah. It's really important to that information is helpful. You know, we think that we have such an interesting relationship with nutrition and dieting that if we don't have success with something, we think to double down. you know, and like, for instance, if you were to go into the gym and try and lift up 50 pounds and you couldn't, you wouldn't say, well, I guess I need to lift 100 pounds. But we do that with nutrition. You know, we say, okay, I'm going to try and eat healthier, and we're not consistent. And then we say, well, I guess I'll go on a cleanse. And it's like, wait, no. We have to kind of step backward and again, build those skills and behaviors rather than double downing with rules and restriction and things like that. And so even just looking at it from a different perspective and saying, you know, how am I relating to this food? How am I behaving around it? How can I build a skill can be a lot more helpful than, oh, maybe I don't have the right rules, right? Maybe I need to try this other thing. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what do you find when you are coaching people on things around nutrition and their behaviors? Like, where is the best place to start? If maybe someone's listening and they're self-reflecting or they're, you know, industry of coaching others, like where is the best place to start with your clients or how do you start with them?
Well, typically, I mean, the people that I usually work with, and I think this would probably fall into your listeners as well, do not lack education. You know, in fact, oftentimes they're overeducated. And so really what I start with them is simplifying, you know, and getting rid of these sort of extreme views. If you think about, again, like I was saying before, times where you've been inconsistent, it's usually because you have a very extreme perspective. You know, you're trying to cut out all carbs. You're feeling like whoever eats the least wins. And really kind of challenging some of those points of views to figure out where it came from and simplifying it is really, really effective. The other thing that I like to do is really talk to them about, honestly, there are things that they consider falling off track or things that they consider setbacks. You know, people will come in and they'll say, Tara, you know, here's an example. I overeat every night. It's emotional eating. I am so good throughout the day, but then at night I get home and it's me and I have my time with the potato chips or the cookies or the ice cream or the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And what they're doing is they're looking at that like that's the problem. But in actuality, that is the symptom. And so we that chain back to the, you know, beginning of the day and we find that, you know, maybe they were trying to be so good that they barely ate anything for breakfast and their lunch was just a small salad and they had some grapes or 10 almonds or whichever rules we have for a snack. So their symptom at night was not emotional. That was a physical hunger. But we have to look at that and then follow the chain back to figure out the root cause. Does that make sense?
Yep. So looking at it like there is whatever that outcome is really a symptom of something else that's going on, possibly higher up in the chain. And that's where you would start with it is closer up, like making sure that you're whatever it may be, like getting enough protein, you're eating enough earlier in the day, you're getting enough vegetables, whatever it may be. It starts earlier than that end symptom of where you're at.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we focus on the symptom because that's where the shame is, right? We focus on the symptom because that's where the discomfort is. And that's where we honestly, we use it as a, I don't know, reflection of our values, our reflection of our self-worth. But in actual, we very rarely as humans do things that don't have a beneficial result on some level, right? You know, so like sweet cravings, for instance, we hate them, you know, right? They sabotage us. They're to blame for us falling off track. But usually that's just a sign that you're either not eating enough calories or not eating enough protein. And so it's your body saying, hey man, go get me some fuel. Right. And so once you understand that, then you can say, oh, this is the symptom, right? I'm not a failure as a person. I just need to, like you said, maybe get a little bit more protein earlier, maybe have a heartier breakfast, you know, not try and willpower myself through this. And so when you look at it almost like a partnership, like what is my body trying to tell me? What are my behaviors signaling as far as needs go? It can be really eye-opening. And again, it gets to the root cause rather than just attacking.
Okay. Got it. Sort of reminds me of, you know, when we talk about the, what is it? Is it called the thought download? I think it is where you talk about, you're looking at like, okay, this is the circumstance. Then I go into, this is the emotion I feel from that circumstance. And usually it's like whenever we encounter something like a circumstance, we have an emotion we instantly go to. Like, let's just say, for example, we're going to talk business for a sec. And you look at your numbers and you aren't where you think you should be. So you look at that, which is really the symptom. And instead of looking at the action you want, you already assume that that is what's going to happen. And then you back up the chain and all your actions actually end up pointing down to that either way. Whereas in when you reverse it and you look at it as like, okay, this is what's happened. Like, you know, my business maybe isn't where I want it to be. But then you plan out, okay, if I still want to get to this action down here, I've got to back it up with what actions I have to take. So I don't know if that clearly articulates what it just reminded me of that example of the, instead of just taking it for face value that like, I can't eat well, or I have too many cravings. It's like, no. That's just the, like, if we were to call it like, that's just the circumstance that's happening right now. But what is it that is backing up that, you know, behavior? Like, what, like you said, what is your body trying to tell you?
100%. You know, we don't live in a vacuum, and our actions aren't in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. There's usually a pretty distinct sequence of events. But what we like to do, and I'm saying we, because I'm 100% part of this, is we like to use, you know, past, let's say, setback or falling off track as evidence of future failure, right? Mm-hmm. We like to say, oh, here I am again. That means I'm a big, you know, never stick with this. That means I don't have willpower. We're saying, okay, this is some really good information. Let me take my work just for a second, you know, say, okay, what were the sequence of events that led up to this? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it is be more committed. Sometimes it is you are triggered by something. You know, it isn't as black and white, but I have never in my 15 years with thousands of people that I have worked with, I've met someone that has a behavior that is inherently, that doesn't have some sort of positive aspect to it, right? Mm-hmm. It may be incongruent with goals, but until they see positive aspect, they can't solve it, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it is, you know, here's an example with food, but let's say you're on a diet and you've been so quote unquote good and you're seeing results and you feel awesome, but you've kind of been locked in your house, right? You're like avoiding your friends, you're not doing any of the things. And then you go out, okay, well, I'll try it, but I'll be good. And you lose your mind, right? And everything blows up and so you say, oh, that means I can't go in and do that, right? That means I'm not allowed to go out anymore. I don't have self-control. Instead, it means that there's an actual need that's not being met, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's you need practice going out to eat because you've been isolating. You haven't built that skill. Maybe it's that you know, need to stop thinking of it as being so black and white, so on and off. Maybe it's you just needed to let loose for a night and move on with your life, you know? So there's a lot of different ways of looking at it, but you have to look at the root cause of it. It's usually showing a need rather than a flaw.
Okay. Got it. I love this idea about that you talk about with people spending a lot of their time and mental energy around worrying about food and nutrition and thinking they have to get it right. Can you speak a little bit more to that and why that, as someone that, you know, teaches and works with clients, that you really focus on actually having those setbacks, why they're important?
Well, in all honesty, you know, we don't learn as much as I love when, you know, a client comes in or I have a student in my course that is having a great week. I love giving them high fives, but that is not how we learn, right? We learn literally from, you know, kind of falling off track or having a setback, looking at it. And this is the part that we hate to do, looking at it, and then kind of altering our strategy a little bit. And that is, I mean, when you understand, oftentimes we like to think of nutrition as a set of rules, right? As eat this, eat not that. And so when we break that rule, we use it as evidence of failure. But when you understand that nutrition is actually a skill, you can look at when you sort of quote unquote fall off track as an opportunity to turn that setback into a stepping stone, right? You can use that as an opportunity to say, okay, how can I, you know, reestablish my solution? How can I make some changes in order to prevent this setback in the future? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so in all honesty, when a client comes in and they have a terrible week, I mean, I want to give them a hug because I don't want everyone to have a terrible week. But inside of me, I'm like, woohoo, this is when we're going to learn. You know, this is when true change actually happens. Now, the process of that, like I said before, the important part is looking at it. And that's the part that we don't like to do because we feel so ashamed. We're so upset by it. And so when we don't, so we want to like fast forward, right? We want to pretend like it didn't even happen. And when we do that, we actually don't learn from it. And so it's very, very important when you are, when you have an off day or an off meal, or, you know, maybe something in your business doesn't go the way that you want, to resist that time where you go punitive, right? To resist that, you know, oh, I'll never do this. You know, I'm a failure. And take a step back and say, okay, why did this happen? What can I learn from it? And how can I keep moving forward? Because it's literally the only way that you can make long-term consistent change.
And when you say nutrition is a skill, can you give us a little bit more definition of what that means versus how people actually look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we like to have rules with nutrition, right? Like carbs are bad, or pizza is bad, or sugar is bad, or things like that. And so we like to lump things into big categories. But eating isn't just fuel, right? Eating is also community. Eating is a way of showing love. Eating is pleasure. And so when you lump things into rules, it doesn't give you the opportunity to learn how to relate to that food in different situations, right? All of a sudden, you see it as black and white. But when you, you know, nutrition being a skill, what I mean by that is, let's say, let's see, what's a good example of that? It's having a clear understanding of the cause and effect of food and how that relates to your ultimate goals. So when it comes to nutrition being a skill is really rooted in learning how to behave around food in different situations, right? When you learn how to drive, you learn some rules, right? And your hands are at 10 and 2, and you're super freaked out, and you're scanning the road, and you're doing all the things. Over time, the more skillful you become with driving, those things become internalized, right? So they're not taking up your full brain. Now, to be clear, it's not like you're passed out in the, you know, passenger seat. You know, you're still very much engaged, but because you've become skillful with it, you're not focused on it all of the time. Now, if someone jumps out at you, you can react, right? If there's a road closure, able to figure out how to, you know, to get around it. But you're not as mentally consumed because you've become very skillful of the act of driving.
Okay, got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So like in the beginning, when you're trying to learn nutrition and the skills around it, then it's going to take more consumption and more effort to learn those things. Cause I always find like I learn from watching people, especially when it comes to nutrition. I went out to stay with a girlfriend of mine and I noticed she's a is she a vegan? I think she might be a vegan I think she's a vegetarian because she eats cheese. Yeah. So I remember watching her and I noticed every morning she had a shake, and then every day at lunch, like most days, like 9 out of 10, she would have like veggies and different types of dips and hummus and cheese and different things like that. It was like a lot of days and I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Like how she makes sure to get in the protein early in the day, but then making sure that veggies and all that stuff are on hand. And so I took that skill set after I came home from her of just knowing like, okay, that these are the things that, you know, seem to work well. She's a nutrition coach. And I started having more of those things in my fridge available. It was much easier for me to think about eating like veggies and dip versus like, oh, I got to cook like a whole thing of broccoli and try to like get all this in at one or two meals versus like thinking of it as like snacking. So it is interesting. Yeah. Like I like that, you know, that idea that it's a skill set that you pick up things and you learn things over time, not just this food is good, this food isn't, that sort of idea.
Well, that's a wonderful example. I'm glad you brought that up because one of the biggest struggles that I see with consistency of action is decision fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. We like to walk out the door in the morning and just hope that food happens to us. And although eating is great, figuring out what to eat, preparing what to eat, especially if you are trying to accommodate a family, is really a lot of work. And we tend to avoid it until the last minute. And so that's when decision fatigue kicks in. And decision fatigue is basically the concept that over time, the more decisions we make, quality of them start to deteriorate. So that's why you see a lot of decision fatigue, or a lot of decisions based on fatigue happening in the evenings, right? When people start the day good, but in the evening they're tired. And so a skill is recognizing that, you know, meal prep, for instance, isn't meant to confine you. It isn't meant to say you're not allowed to eat anything but these chopped veggies. It's meant to say, okay, well, I'm really busy. Figuring out what I'm going to eat at every single meal and snack is exhausting. So let me be prepared so I can grab it, right? That's a very skillful way of relating to food. Whereas this would be, I'm not allowed to have anything but this, right? That's two, you know, two different of looking at that.
That's really. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Super interesting. I was thinking about some of the other skills recently that, you know, being pregnant and whatnot, like I'm in a prenatal test group. So I've got these workouts that I'm doing that are really cool, like pelvic floor stuff and all these things that, like, before I was doing like super high intensity stuff that it was just like, I thought like, oh, this is what I need to be doing. And then I started doing these other workouts and I was like, no, this is actually what I need to be doing. But along with that, I've sort of gotten into this routine of like, I'm a creature of habit, but it's because, like you're saying, it's because of that decision fatigue. Like I have the same thing every morning and like usually for snack, and not because like I don't want to have other things, but it's just like, that's what my mind goes to. I like to follow that structure. But one thing that I'm really like leaning into, and I guess like learning, is there are certain foods that I find I'm just more attracted to that are already healthy. Like if you told me like you have to eat broccoli and chicken, I would be like, no, never. Yeah. Like I will not ever be healthy if that's what I have to eat. But there are certain things, not while I'm pregnant, but before, that I could eat all the time, like sashimi, like cooked fish, no. Raw fish, yes. Like weird, but like we all, I think, have these like things about what we're attracted to eating that actually make the journey a lot more pleasurable. And another thing would be like, I love salads with like pears and blue cheese, like that combination of like figuring out the like perfect salad. But if you were to say, here, you have to have like a grocery store salad every day with like the cheese and the tomato, I'd be like, no, that just doesn't turn my crank. So it is interesting because when you become skillful at something, you sort of recognize those little hacks within yourself that just make it a little bit easier to get the job done.
100%. You know, and that those are great examples where, you know, you're looking at the meals kind of holistically, right? We're typically not satisfied with a meal unless it has a health component and a pleasure component. Mm. And, you know, if you think about you had quote unquote healthiest thing, say your broccoli and chicken example. Afterward, I mean, you may have words you're like, I need something, right? I need something sweet. I need something like that. Or think about a time where you've had something pleasurable with no health component, right? And afterwards, in a weird way, you're still kind of hungry. Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced?
Oh, yeah.
Because you need both. And so doing something like you said, like, yeah, let's get some veggies in, but how can some joy to this? Like, yeah, some cheese in there. That's awesome. Rather than thinking of it very black and white. Or like, I'm a chips person. I love savory. Sweets I could be done with, but savory. And so I eat chips a fair amount, you know, like that's actually a pretty consistent diet. I don't eat a ton of them, but what it does is it actually gets me home to eat the thing, right? So if I were to have, let's say, a salad with some chips with it, it's like fun to me. Whereas if it's just a salad, I'm going to be like, well, but I could also stop by the burrito place and get that instead, because that sounds way more interesting. And sort of self-awareness of what you desire and what's going to be also beneficial from a health standpoint.
Okay, cool. That's really interesting. Yeah, because I think of like the other, even some of the other cravings I've had recently. And like normally I'm like a carb, like I could eat all the carbs. But since I've been pregnant, I've been like switched over for some reason to sweets. And it could be easy to go to, like, I could eat like the chocolate, like raisins or different things, like, or rosebuds or things like that. But one interesting habit is, like, at night I have strawberries every night with like a little bit of Cool Whip or a little bit of like whipped cream of some sort. And it like fills that same void. But you're right. It's got that health component. And then it's also got that little side of fun that I'm like, oh, I'm doing something a little bit fun. But, you know, like it fixes that. Yeah, it feels good doing both of those.
Exactly. Giving yourself that to have like some Cool Whip, right? To have some that you know, we might put on the like, you know, naughty list actually keeps you consistent, right? Like if you tried to fight that, if you were like, this is a no Cool Whip zone, you may do it for 3 days. And then I guarantee day four, you'll end up face down eating the entire thing, right? because you've heard that. So by like gains and understanding what your body needs, both emotionally and physically, you've built a really great skill and behavior that's going to keep you consistent with your long-term goals, which is to maintain your health and, you know, provide a beautiful environment for a growing child and all of those things. So that's an excellent example of a skill and behavior that uses nutrition knowledge as well.
And so this brings me to, I think, another question that, at least before I was pregnant, and I'm sure for many people, it kind of falls into that zone of like, what's the best way to manage this? So if you're somebody that likes to have a little glass of wine here or there, or something like that, like how do you teach people how to do that in a healthy way? Because there's obviously like, you know, healthy ways, and then there's like not healthy ways, which I know is like so tied to the emotional factor of feeling like, okay, I get home from work, that's when I have a glass of wine. And it becomes this like intertwined habit. Like I know I felt like that when, you know, it's 5 o'clock, like this is when I have my gin and tonic or glass of wine or whatever. And I started doing some research and studying more about the triggers that happen, like, because alcohol is so intertwined in our culture of like, we feel happy, we're celebrating, let's have a glass of champagne or a glass of wine or whatever cocktail might be happening. Or I've had a stressful day and that is how we cope as well. So what are your teachings on this and how do you talk to your clients about that?
So I'm glad that you asked that. Well, a couple of different reasons. If you are doing something and it's not incongruent with your life as a whole, then you don't have to worry about it, right? So if it's not having a negative impact on your behaviors or health or things like that, and it's not important to you, then it is okay to eat food or drink something just because it tastes or feels good. Now, having said that, where sort of the suffering comes in is when your actions are incongruent with your long-term goals, right? Or if you're noticing like, gosh, it's weird that I'm just doing this. Why am I just doing it? So much of alcohol, and to be clear, I drink alcohol. I love wine. I love beer. I love all the things. But so much of alcohol is habitual and ritualistic. Right? Like your example was perfect where it's, you know, it's 5 o'clock. I've seen a ton of this during the quarantine because it's really our only indicator that we're transitioning from day to night, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's our only indicator that it's a weekend or for people with kids, it's their only indicator that they're a grown up, right?
Yeah.
They're like immersed with children all day and they're like, you know what? Look at me. I'm allowed to do this because I'm a grown up. So when something becomes something that's just a ritual or just a habit, I think it is important to challenge that. You know, it's important to say, okay, am I doing this because it's bringing me great joy or am I doing this just because there are some days where a glass of wine is a game changer, right? Where you're like, this is delicious. I'm, you know, hanging out with my friends or it's, you know, the perfect temperature outside and I'm sitting on the deck. And there are other times where you're doing it just because. And so something like that is if you're doing it just because, I like to see people to break that ritual and break that habit and find an alternative option. Again, that's not black and white. That doesn't mean that you don't ever touch it again, but you know, maybe you can put something in that place that will not be incongruent with your long-term goals. You know, if you're, I mean, I don't know if you would find this, but if you're having like a sparkling water, or maybe that's a time of day where you go out for a walk with your husband to, you know, to connect after a long day of work, or you find something that's going to give you what you actually need during that time that's necessarily alcohol based. Mm-hmm. And then there's plenty of room for when it is worth it, right? Mm-hmm. Where it is kind of a game changer, where it does make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I've found with it, with now not, it's not obviously part of my habits now with mm-hmm. being pregnant. What I've found is that there is something that's very sacred about having a special drink, you know, that I can like still like bring to someone's house and be like, here is my tonic and my lavender and these things that I can still like mix up and it feels special. Like I don't have it all the time. But that for me is like, it's sacred, like having something that I can look forward to. And, you know, my husband will have he brews beer. So he'll like have his beer when he's, you know, like brewed something or, you know, like whatever day it is that he's home and wants to have a drink. And I'm like, oh, let me get my like ginger beer or whatever. Like it's almost just the feeling of doing something a little bit out of the ordinary that I never would have thought I would catch myself saying this before, but that is really what sort of piques that I'm doing something special right now that sort of hits that same nerve a little bit. So I think that that's really interesting. Like that, you know, like you've said with the behavior and being able to recognize when it's something that's just a habit now, and it doesn't really give you that, maybe that joy or that pure joy that you're looking for. And one other thing, this is like super random, but I was, again, like I was at a coach retreat and I'm like, that's why I love going to coach retreats, because I like learn so much from the other coaches and stuff in the room. But so one of the girls, her name is Julie, and she's so cute. Like she was like, okay, so I'm making drinks, like, and she's got the Malibu out. And then, so she would make these drinks with Malibu, sparkling water, and then like just like a drip of orange juice or something like to just change the color. And I was like, how have I never thought of this? Like, cause I'm not a big, like, I know, like, no, drink vodka water. And I'm like, oh, like, I don't know. It just doesn't have the same like specialness I'm looking for. But it is interesting, like the same thing with food. There are certain things that like, there is like a little bit of that healthier version where you have the health benefit, or you're just not drinking pure sugar or whatever it may be, but it still is pleasurable. So like I've found there's a lot of joy in exploring how to find those things and mm-hmm. experimenting, because sometimes, like you're saying, it's easy to be like, no, 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 that's black and white. You just shouldn't. And then, you know, you shit all over yourself, you know, as they
say. Exactly. And I think that we give the credit, and please don't hear this as food is not pleasurable or alcohol is not pleasurable. Mm. I want every single person I work with or talk to or meet in my life to get great joy and pleasure from the food that they're eating, period.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, we also give a lot of credit to both food and alcohol as our source of entertainment, as our source of joy and our source of pleasure. And we can focus so much on it without recognizing that, you know, oftentimes it's the environment or the experience that we're really getting the joy from. You know, it's the, you know, I'm sure Julie, was that what you said her name was?
Yeah, Julie. Yeah.
She probably, I mean, I'm kind of picturing her in my head being so happy making that for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Right. And I'm picturing other people like getting excited and it being a community and, ooh, let me try it. And ooh, let me learn from it. Like that's a really joyous experience. And yes, there's alcohol present and stuff like that, but that's really not it. Right. You know, I doubt if Julie makes that drink by herself, she's getting nearly as much joy out of it. Right.
Yeah.
Or out to eat. Like, yes, food enhances situations, right? And, you know, alcohol may enhance, but it's usually the connection. It's usually the experience. And I think re-anchoring yourself with that, you realize that, again, the food and alcohol can be part of it, but it's not really the focus when it comes down to it. Now, that can be different when we're in a restrictive headspace and it's our only opportunity to get joy or pleasure from food. Then, oh, yeah, then it can switch from, you know, from enhancing to obsessing, right? Because you're like, I'm never going to be able to see that again. So it's all I can think about that right now. But as you lift up those rules a little bit and become more skillful and work on both the physical, behavioral, and emotional part of eating, then it enhances it. And you recognize it, that it's part of a really big, beautiful world, not just a single focus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. So Tara, in terms of where people can find out more about you, where to follow you, and where to like learn more about what you do in the nutritional space and behind the like your behavioral strategies and what you teach, where is the best place for them to find you?
Well, on social. So mostly you'll find me over on Instagram and Facebook. And so my social handle is Nutrition Tara. And then I have a ton of resources as well on my website. And that's just my name. So my website is taracoleman.com. You can download some free stuff. There's recipes. A lot of the behavioral mindset stuff that we're talking about is 15 years worth of experience is found right there.
Love it. Thank you so much for providing so much insight for the listeners today. And it's just really nice to have a candid conversation about this stuff and to sort of, you know, like release that, you know, all that pressure that builds up from feeling like you've got to be perfect with it and knowing it's sort of a living, breathing thing and a skill set that you're always improving. So thank you so much for sharing your philosophy around it and all your golden nuggets.
Oh, thank you. One thing, if I can bring up real quick,
and please, yeah,
the women and men in this world that are concerned with this, right? The women and men in this world that think about their nutrition, that worry about their health, that are proactive in making changes, they are the people who are, you know, literally making the world go round. There are CEOs, entrepreneurs, our mothers, our caretakers, our friends, and they do all these things and accomplish all of these things with probably having about 30 to 50% of their brains mentally consumed with what they should be eating. Is their body right? You know, should I wait until I lose those 5 pounds? And really, you know, my personal ultimate goal, but I think the ultimate goal of a lot of people moving forward in the health community is to free up that mental space. Because I think that these people, I can't even imagine the world that we would live in if these people could use 100% of their brains. Put that chatter to rest and use that time to build compassionate relationships and, you know, put it into your children and teaching and loving and learning. I mean, that's the end. So that's what I'm excited about personally.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. If you're ready to turn your Beachbody dream into a Beachbody business, I have something special for you. Business Bootcamp for Fitness Coaches will help you overcome the overwhelm of never knowing what to post so you can show up consistently on social, get off the icky hey girl hamster wheel, and finally see more engagement from customers who enthusiastically slide into your DMs to join you. This Facebook group is totally free to join. Head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now. And just for joining, you'll get 5 totally templated social media posts that work, accountability and camaraderie in our private Facebook group, and that post-workout feeling of accomplishment. See you there. Again, you can head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now.